Hello, and welcome to Michigan and Other Mayhem, the show about Michigan, murder, mysteries, histories, and other mayhem from around the world. Your hosts are Allie
and Jen.
Okay, Jen, let's do this thing.
Allie, can you hear me?
Oh my goodness, hello. Loud and clear.
Really? Oh, I did good.
Yeah.
We'll see if that continues.
I know, I'm like, because you're out at the lake house where it gets sketchy.
Yeah, and I usually bring their coffee tea bags.
Oh, yeah, I use those.
I couldn't find any at the grocery store, so I said, no worries. I'll get these cone-shaped filters. Uh-huh. I'll bring my coffee. I'll just heat my water up and then pour it in. I have, long story short, coffee all over my counter. I went through that. Three filters that... the cone, the end of the cone just opened up. And so I said, no big deal. I'll just put a new cone in this cup and pour it in there. And it just kept happening and I gave up. So here I am with no coffee.
I am so sorry. I like the coffee. Yeah, it comes in a tea bag and you use the coffee like you would tea. And I use it when I don't have anything, you know, quick way to make coffee. The fact that you are stuck without coffee is sad as hell. And I just hope you're okay. You want, I'll take counseling. Okay.
I'm going to need it after this.
Yeah. But, well, today I don't have any murder for you. I just have some, I read that fact book that doesn't have facts. Actually, it says, I should read I'm actually looking at it right now. The Book of Useless Information is what it's called.
So that's interesting because I don't have murder either.
Ooh.
I read a March 5th, 1965 Life magazine article.
Oh.
And it was called Man with Two Wives, Amnesia or Hoax. The story is about Larry Bader and Fritz Johnson.
Really?
Yeah, it was so interesting. I had to do it. Plus, I needed a break.
Sounds really interesting. Do you want? How about I go? You go last because you're going to have the biggest bang for the buck. Mine is just like, don't trust these books. That's what my motto is going to be at the end. So since you had like the surprise, you know, like the twisted, you could go last because mine is. You could tell at one point I have ADD while I'm doing this.
All right, go for it.
Okay, so I was reading this book and it's called the Book of Useless Information. It's by Noel Botham and the Useless Information Society. That's who wrote this book.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was just hoping to find like an unusual fact or something I didn't already know. And I see this fact on page 22 about Alfred Hitchcock. And I thought that, okay, maybe I can learn something interesting. Okay. But this is where shit goes sideways. So it says in the book that he doesn't have a belly button. Now, all humans are born with a belly button. Okay. That's where we attach to our mothers. By our umbilical cord, and our belly button is the scar where we used to attach to our mother's bodies. This is how our mothers sustain our life. It's through our belly button, right? Mm-hmm. So I searched this fact to figure out what happened because I know that he was born with a belly button, and I read about it on maybe a different sites, and everybody kept saying everybody's born with a belly button. I'm like, I know, but why are they saying this? So my understanding is Alfred Hitchcock once had some type of abdominal surgery, and after the repair. It seems the doctor slash may not have, I don't know, omitted his belly button. Now, Wikipedia, yeah, I know, right? Wikipedia did say in 1957, Alfred Hitchcock had to be admitted to the hospital. And while there, surgery was done to remove his gallbladder and repair a hernia. But that doesn't, you don't need to take somebody's belly button away. So I was just like, right. No. Yeah. So I was just like, I don't know. That sounds weird as hell. So now I'm suspicious. On that same page, that I read about the belly button, I read this quote. It says, quote, Rita Moreno was the first and only entertainer to win all four of America's top industry awards, the Oscar, the Emmy, the Grammy, and the Tony, end quote. So immediately I know that's wrong because I had read articles and listened to podcasts about it's called EGOT, that's what it's short for, Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony. I've seen different EGOT winners. John Legend is a recent winner. So I was like, well, let me check the copyright of the book, right? Maybe it's, the copy. So I read the copyright and it's 2006. And I bought this book in May of 2021. So I was like, oh. Yeah, so I was like, oh, well, I was like, maybe that explains something. So I do check out other winners on the Wikipedia page because it has it listed. And Rita Moreno is not the only American to win the EGOT before 2006. So I was
So no matter what, it was wrong.
yeah, I was trying to give him a chance, right?
Shit.
So there's 12 people who've won the EGOT title competitively, together with 16 people having EGOTs. That includes like honorary awards. So some EGOT winners you might recognize are Mel Brooks, Audrey Hepburn, Whoopi Goldberg, and Andrew Lloyd Webber. Now here's where my ADD kicks in. So I read Whoopi Goldberg, right? And I was like, oh, she won it. She's an American who won the EGOT before 2006. So I was like, okay. So now I'm trying to find a couple things. I'm looking up Whoopi Goldberg's career because I know she's an actress, but I wondered like what Grammy award did she win? Because the Grammys are the Sound and Music Awards, right? So I'm thinking maybe it's her sister act movies. That's my first guess.
Oh,
No.
yeah.
Yeah, no, I was wrong. I was wrong. So what I learned is in the 1986, Whoopi won the Grammy Award for the best comedy album. And it was an original recording of her show that was on Broadway. And it's simply labeled Whoopi Goldberg Original Broadway Show Recording. And she actually has a whole page just for her awards and nominations. I got a little bit lost in it, but I came back. All right. So I'm wondering, like, now I'm wondering, like, who did she win over that year? Like, she had the best comedy album. Like, who were the other comedy albums? Because I don't know if you remember, but when I was a kid, comedy albums were a big deal. You got, like, do you remember that?
Right, I do remember that, but I didn't realize you could win a Grammy for it.
I didn't know that either. So now I'm looking up and I'm trying to see, all right, who was she against in 1986? One was Cheech and Chong, Born in East LA. And I remember like the Born in East LA song. He did it to Born in the USA. And I wondered if that was the one because they have a Cheech and Chong comedy album that had a rolling paper the size of the album. And I always wondered if that was what it was because I remember seeing it as a kid. And the other one of the other albums it was up against was Billy Crystal's You Look Marvelous. Do you remember that? Or are we too young?
Yes, and I love Billy Crystal.
Yeah. And the other one was Joe Piscopo, Honeymooners Rap. I do remember that. I was not a Joe Piscopo fan, even back in the day.
I don't remember that.
And the last person was Weird Al Yankovic, Dare to Be Stupid, which I thought was amazing.
Right, he is amazing.
Yeah. Cassie, my sister Cassie and her husband take their kids to his concert, and so does my cousin Jay and his wife Erica. They like to make a thing of going to Weird Al Yankovic concerts with their kids, and I guess they just have a great time. So this, yeah, my ADD is kicking in. I'm looking at all sorts of stuff up, right? And I try to look at the book to see if there's any other weird stuff, but at this point, I can't bring myself to do it. I'm still looking at the book. It's still open to page 22. So I decided, well, let me get another fact book so maybe I can drop an actual fact here, right? So I get Illustrated Histories of Everyday Behavior, and this is by Laura Hetherington, and it's illustrated by Rebecca Pry. And so I look before I buy it. The copyright is 2021. I was like, okay. Yes. So the format of this book, it has two pages that face each other with like a common theme. And they have anywhere from about like 3 to 7 informational sentences, along with like simple sketches to help illustrate the point of the facts. And according to pages 14 and 15, the practice of giving a teacher an apple comes from the tradition of smaller communities paying teachers with food and other necessities. And the apple's also considered like a symbol of knowledge. And I did learn this, that if you want to say someone's kissing up to management, you call them an apple polisher. You know what I mean? Like they polish the apple. Yeah. So the book mentions a 1939 Bing Crosby song about schmoozing a teacher, quote, an apple for the teacher always does the trick, end quote, like a little teacher bribery. So, you know, at this point, I'm not trusting shit. I go on the internet to verify these book facts, and I found two sites that copies the book literally word for word. And so I don't know what came first, like the book or the internet sites, but they were twinning. Okay. That's like you bastards. You know, I hate that. So the only place where the website deviates from like the physical book is where they mention in Denmark and Sweden, they also have a tradition of paying teachers with bushels of potatoes and or apples. And then I read a Reader's Digest apple article that backs the book up and expanded on it. So now I'm confident that that's a fact.
I used to read Reader's Digest all the time.
I used to have a subscription, my own, as an adult.
That was good shit.
It was good shit, and it's actually really affordable. I was thinking about it the other day. So pages 20 and 21 now, they say that the tradition of paying it forward has been around at least as long as the ancient Greeks. And there's this ancient Greek comedy on the subject of paying it forward by, you know, doing good deeds by this guy whose name was Dicyclos, which also known as the Grouch. in 1317 or 317 BC. So Ben Franklin writes a letter in 1784, and he asks this person who says, you know, I'm going to pay you back for the loan. He says to this person, hey, instead of giving the money back to me, give it to another person who may need it. And that's like the first time, you know, it was written down, you know, in a letter to somebody. So the first time the true phrase was written in a publication, though, like in an actual book, was in 1916. This novel was written by Lily Hardin Hammond. And it says, quote, you don't pay love back, you pay it forward, end quote. So I was like, oh my God, that's beautiful. So I immediately start to search Michigan Pay It Forward, right? Because I'm wondering, do we have anything? And I found out that Station 17 in Grand Rapids, Michigan has a program where they highlight people who pay it forward. And they even have like a pay it forward person of the year. And there are pay it forward mentors and a program through the University of Michigan that helps students get accepted into college. There's a separate pay it forward community foundation in Michigan that collects items to donate. They give to schools, food kitchens, and other organizations in need. They're a nonprofit that works in Macomb and St. Clair counties. And finally, April 28th, 2009 was declared by Michigan's governor, Gretchen Whitmer, as Pay It Forward Day for our state.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, so we do. When I search Michigan Pay It Forward, I'm like, please have something come up, because it's not come up before. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
Yeah, so that is mine. Tell me about yours.
So we really.
Hello?
Oh, my.
What happened?
Technical difficulties.
Oh, that's okay. I'm like, we were going really strong.
I know. My headset just turned off.
Oh.
But you can hear me, so.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was going to say, so we know now that you, if you're getting a fact book, it's not always true. But it's a good read.
Yeah, and if it says on the front useless information, they're probably telling you the truth. Because it's pretty fucking useless. It's not true. Yes.
So the story starts on May 14th, 1957.
Okay.
Lawrence Bader, known as Larry, he was 30, living in Akron, Ohio, where he was a cookware salesman, which I believe that's a traveling salesman. He was a traveling salesman.
Okay. That used to be a big thing back in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
At the time, he was married and had three children, one on the way. And his hobbies were fishing and archery.
Okay.
On this day, he told his wife he had to go to Cleveland for business. And then he would be headed over to Lake Erie to do some fishing and would be back late in the evening. Before leaving, everything was normal. He cashed a check, paid a few bills. But Larry would not return home that evening. The next morning, his boat would be found about 5 miles from where he entered the water. In the police investigation, they found that Larry had went to a local boat rental company, rented a small outboard motor 14-foot boat. The boat rental company told investigators that they warned Larry that there would be active storms and the water was expected to be really rough.
Okay. So they're like, why are you going out there? Like, you're not going to be fishing. It's choppy.
Yeah.
It was said
Larry acknowledged the storm and wasn't concerned because he would be back before dark, because the actual big storm would be then.
Okay.
What was odd is that after the conversation, he asked them to install running lights to the boat. My thought is, you know, why do you need running lights if you're expected to come back before dark?
Yeah. And if it's not, and if it's not so dark that, you know, boats can't see you, then you should be fine. Why do you need running lights all of a sudden?
Right.
Yeah.
Larry left and was off to do some fishing. The Coast Guard reported they did talk to him while he was on the water, not far from shore, around sunset. They warned him of the increased winds and rough waters and offered to actually help him get back to land. But Larry didn't accept, you know, their help, waved him off.
Wow.
The police investigation found that at the time he rented the boat, he did have a lot of cash on him. And really? somehow they knew he had a suitcase with him. I couldn't figure out how they knew that, but knew he had a suitcase.
Yeah, say maybe someone saw him put the suitcase in the boat or something. I don't know. I just made that up. I don't know why I said that.
Or maybe I thought maybe, you know, the boat rental company saw it.
Oh, true.
Yeah. The article wasn't specific.
Yeah, to say, and they didn't say how they knew he had a lot of money on him. Or maybe he was just like, oh, I'm taking out money to go on a little vacation.
Well, I'm thinking where the money came into play is he had to rent the boat.
Okay.
So you pulled the money out, you notice he's got a lot of money.
Okay. That makes sense when he goes to pull the money out that they see he's got a wad of cash.
Yeah. The following morning, the boat was located about 5 miles from where he entered the water with a bit of damage. But the odd thing was it wasn't overturned. It was said there was an oar, life preservers, fishing gear, and a gas can. No Larry, no money, no suitcase.
So just a perfectly fine boat without Larry in it.
Yep, just a little bit of damage.
Okay.
The Life magazine article talked about how the police suspected that somebody might have hijacked him for his money.
Oh, since he did have some cash on him. Okay.
Now, at this point, I am thinking he had a lot of money. He had a suitcase. While he was going fishing, who brings cash in a suitcase to go fishing?
Yeah, not to mention, as someone who grew up on a lake, there's a high chance of you tipping. You know what I mean? You wouldn't bring your suitcase in the boat with you. You'd get it all wet if you tipped and it could sink to the bottom.
Right.
Yeah.
Larry Bader, missing person case, would stay open with no leads. And in 1960, his wife had him declared legally dead and received a payout from his life insurance company.
Okay.
But what makes the story headline ask the question amnesia or hoax is enter John Johnson of Nebraska, known as Fritz.
Okay.
Let me tell you about Fritz.
Tell me about Fritz.
This story I'm about to tell you starts about 4 days after Larry Bader's disappearance. Okay. In Omaha, Nebraska, Fritz became recognizable in the community when he sat outside a local bar on a flagpole for 30 days to raise money for polio.
Okay. So wait, nobody's seen him before, and all of a sudden he shows up, sits on a pole for 30 days?
Yep.
Okay. Just okay.
Based on Wikipedia, this led to popularity and opportunities for him. He became a bartender at the bar by the flagpole, and he went on to be a radio announcer and moved his popularity status up to a minor celebrity as the sports director at the local television station.
Okay.
So this guy shows up, nobody knows him. Sits on a flagpole for 30 days. Bam. He's got opportunities.
Okay. Okay.
The Life magazine article gave more information talking about how he arrived at the bar by the flagpole in a suit with a suitcase and a Navy driver's license, which had his name, John Johnson. As a bartender, he told people how he was an orphan that was one of many, I think it said about 22. So he was one of 22 orphans who were deposited on the doorsteps of Boston residents. And all the orphans' names were John Johnson.
What?
Yeah.
Some tomfoolery, sir.
He also told stories about joining the Navy at 17, stories about World War II and the Korean War.
Okay.
He moved from bartending to radio and then to television. He was described as a fun, always had a smile on his face. Many came to talk to him about their troubles because it seems he never had any.
Okay.
Always a happy guy.
Okay.
He lived a bachelor life until 1961 when he met his girlfriend, Nancy. Nancy had a daughter from a previous marriage. He adopted her daughter, and then they had a son together.
Okay.
So Fritz has a wife. Well, no, they're not married. I'm sorry. Fritz has a girlfriend.
Okay.
And he adopts her daughter, and then they have a kid.
Okay, so he's got two kids.
Yep. In February 1965, a person who knew Larry, so bring back Larry.
Okay.
So a person who knew Larry saw Fritz at a sporting goods show. He reminded him of Larry so much so, he actually got one of Larry's nieces and brought her to the sporting goods show. So at the sporting goods show, Fritz is demonstrating archery, which happens to be Larry Bader's hobby was archery and fishing.
Okay.
So she actually approached Fritz and asked him if he was Larry Bader. Fritz laughed and said no. But the niece was adamant that that was her uncle, Larry. So she got Larry's brothers to come to the show.
Okay.
So they actually had to travel there. And then they saw Fritz and were sure it was their brother. So to prove these people were wrong, because Fritz said, I am not Larry Bader, he agrees to go to the police station and get fingerprinted. So you're pretty sure. You know,
that's pretty sure. Yeah.
He was pretty sure he is not. He's telling these people are crazy. Get rid of them. Let me just fingerprint myself. So they went to the police station. And Fritz Johnson was Larry Bader.
Oh, he was Larry Bader. Okay.
Yeah. He doesn't understand. Fritz doesn't understand how he's Larry Bader. And then he goes through, this period of time where supposedly, he's conflicted, all his memories are now lies. He finds out he has another wife or he has a wife.
Wait. He's like, oh no, this is terrible. I have another wife.
Yeah. Well, he has a whole nother. Yeah. His other wife and all those kids.
Yeah.
But he really has he acts like he absolutely has no idea that he truly did not know he was Larry Bader.
Okay.
Who would go and get fingerprinted if you really didn't think you were, if you knew you were Larry Bader, you would not go to the police station.
You would because you were caught and you're like, let me just act like I didn't know.
Okay. So maybe. Yeah. So after he was confirmed to be Larry Bader, the insurance company sued him for their money back that they paid his wife.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
No joke. This is true. And the boat rental company sued him for the damages to the boat that he had rented in 1957.
Insult to injury. And you got to pay for the dinged up boat.
And his girlfriend, who he, adopted her daughter and has a son with.
Yeah.
Which at the time, I believe, at this moment, I believe that she had become his fiance.
Yeah. Okay.
She left him.
Ooh.
And then Wikipedia information claims she left him because she was Catholic.
Not sure what that meant, because the marriage to his first wife, one, was null and void.
Right.
And she was a divorcee.
Okay.
So I don't know. So here is where the void is. I couldn't find out much more information than what I've already told you. Articles seem to just repeat themselves. It was one of those.
Okay.
Copy everybody else's words.
Same here with the stupid belly button thing.
But I did find in 1964, he had gotten cancer behind his left eye, and he lost his eye. In 1966, the cancer came back and he passed away.
Oh, no.
So in 65, he found out that he was Larry Bader. 66, he passes away.
Okay.
As for the question, is it amnesia or a hoax? What I found was, one, psychiatrists did examine him for 10 days, and they determined he had no recollection of his former life.
Okay.
Amnesia lasting several years was known to be rare but possible.
Okay.
His memory loss could have been caused by the tumor. You know, in 1964.
True. Okay.
It was found that at the time he disappeared, he had various unsuccessful get rich quick schemes, and he was being investigated for tax evasion by the IRS.
Okay.
Okay. So that's my story, but I have what I think. Do you think Larry Bader went out fishing because he knew there was a storm coming, and then traveled to Nebraska and became a new guy? Or do you believe that something happened, like the boat was rocking and he hit his head, got to shore, smart enough to grab his suitcase, and then he ended up in Nebraska?
I think he left on his own. That's what I believe. I believe he left on his own. And I also believe that... You know, he might have had some issues. You're right. He did have some things go down in his life. Maybe the accumulation of like the tumor and everything just made him be like, let's just start over. And he just went so fucking hard that he convinced himself that first part of his life didn't happen.
Right. And when he left, in 1957, I don't think he had cancer at that point.
Oh, okay. Because
remember, that was 1964, but all your other stuff works out, because this is my thought. The dude didn't like his life. He was in trouble. It didn't say he was in debt, but if you're for tax evasion, you're going to be in some debt. And he went out, staged it, then went to Nebraska, because how in the heck do you have John Johnson license if you didn't plan this? You don't just, you know, have something happen in your boat, get amnesia, and in your suitcase happen to have a John Johnson Navy license.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I believe he was there in 1957 in Nebraska.
Okay.
He knew what he did. And he was lying to people, for God's sakes. He's an orphan of 22 that got dropped off on doorsteps.
Right.
And then the cancer came in 64.
And he had that surgery. And I think that's when he may have actually, like at that point, I could see him losing his having a loss of memory.
Okay.
They're in there taking your eyeball out.
Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So I'm thinking that it was real when he went to the police station and didn't think that he was Larry Bader. I think that's true.
Okay. You do think that's true?
Yeah. I think at that point he didn't know.
Okay.
Or like you said, he's just a good faker.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, I think like maybe, okay. The only way I can think is that he was like, all right, they caught me. All I can do now is pretend like I didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, oh fuck, the niece busted me.
Or.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right too. Like, oh, you know, we're busted. And he knew that he had that the cancer had come back and he was going to die. So why not?
Yeah, true.
So maybe he decided, let's give everybody closure.
Oh, you know what? Yeah. Good point. Yeah, I feel like it's the part that is way too highly suspicious is the having the ID on you. Sorry, sir.
Right.
Yeah. So,
this is a really interesting story. I'm like, I was reading it. For God's sakes, I pulled a 1965 Life magazine article. It was hard to read because
I bet.
It was a scanned copy.
I know. Do you have to do like the magnifying glass roll ending? I've had to do
that. I did.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens. It happens to all of us.
It's not murder this week, everybody, but that was a damn good story.
Yeah, it was a great story. And I can tell you that I have two dead murderers next week because I don't want to be off brand.
Yeah, I'm going back to boyfriends who murder.
I'm doing two people who murdered and then got murdered. Or I'm sorry, one just wasn't murdered. One died, but the other one got murdered. And that's good enough. All right, Jen, well, I'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
All right, bye.